removed from reality. War was about yawning chasms of inactivity, punctuated by brief, screaming interludes of action. And in those brief, screaming interludes, events happened both quickly and with dreamlike slowness, every instant burned into memory. That was how it was, especially during something as compressed and violent as an ambush. There was no warning. Perhaps something had reached down into my dreams and alerted me, so that it was both the ambush and the realization of my error that brought me from sleep. But by the time I awoke, I had no conscious memory of what it was. A sound, perhaps, as they disabled the perimeter warning system, or maybe nothing more than a foot crunching through undergrowth, or the alarm call of a startled animal. It made no difference. There were three of them against the eight of us, and yet they cut us down with merciless ease. The three were dressed in camelioflage armor, shape-shifting, texture-shifting, color-shifting garments, which enveloped them from head to foot. Full bodysuits, like that, were more advanced than the kinds the average militia had access to. Technology which could only be bought through the ultras. That had to be it, then. Ryvich was also dealing with the Lighthugger crew, and maybe he had paid them to deceive Kaweya, supplying false positional information. There was another possibility, too, which was what my sleeping mind had come up with. Perhaps there were two Ryvich parties, one moving south 30 kilometers north of here, with the heavy armaments which Orcagna was monitoring. I had assumed that was the only party, but what if there had been a second squad, moving ahead of them? Perhaps they had lighter armaments which could not be traced by the ultras. The element of surprise would more than compensate for the deficiency in firepower. It had, too. Their weapons were no more advanced or lethal than our own, but they used them with pinpoint accuracy, gunning down first the guards stationed outside the camp before the guards had had a chance to aim their own weapons. But I was barely aware of this part of the attack, still struggling out of sleep, thinking at first that the light pulses and cracks of energy discharge outside were only the dying spasms of the storm as it passed into the deep peninsula. Then I heard the screams, and I began to realize what was happening. By then, of course, it was far too late to do anything about it. Chapter 21. Finally, I woke. For a long time, lying in the golden morning light which streamed into Zebra's room, I replayed the dreams in my head, until at last I could put them to rest and start examining my injured leg. Overnight, the healer had worked wonders, utilizing a medical science well in advance of anything we'd had on Sky's Edge. The wound was now little more than a whitish star of new flesh, and what damage remained was mainly psychological, the refusal of my brain to accept that my leg was now fully capable of performing its intended role. I rose from the couch and took a few awkward experimental steps, finally making my way over to the nearest window, navigating the stepped levels of the broken floor, furniture helpfully shuffling aside to ease my passage. In the light of day, or what passed for day in Chasm City, the great hole at the city's heart looked even closer, even more vertiginous. It was not difficult to imagine how it had lured the first explorers who had come to Yellowstone, whether birthed from robot wombs or riding the first risky starships that had come afterwards. The blotch of warm atmosphere spilling from the chasm was visible from space when other atmospheric conditions were favorable. Whether they had crossed land in crawlers or come skimming down through cloud layers, that first sight of the chasm could never have been anything but heart-stopping. Something had injured the planet thousands of centuries earlier, and this great open wound had still not healed.